This is the Daily Connect on RNIB Connect Radio, the voice of the RNIB Connect community.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Connect podcast, making a welcome return in these unusual times. And I'm coming to you from my little room upstairs in my house because, well, it's the only place you can record these days. I'm home like everybody else. All of the RNIB Connect radio team are at home working away and trying to get, you know, great stories out there. And I thought I'd bring back the Daily Connect podcast for that reason, because it's just so important that we get information out there. And there were so many stories that went out through the week, and I just thought, what if someone missed one of those great stories? So here's the chance to really focus in again on some of the brilliant work that's being done by all of the team working from home. We're going to hear this week from blind golfer Barry McCluskey, the challenges he's facing, trying to, someone who's very active, who's now being told to isolate or at least stay at home. Not being able to get out there regularly, what does that do to you? What does that mean to you? Also, we're going to be hearing from the Macular Society. If you have age-related macular degeneration and you've had the condition for a while, you could help other people who are just learning about or are developing the condition through befriending. The Macular Society are looking for your help. And we'll also hear what blind veterans are up to as well. But first up, I'm going to give you a chance to hear my interview with Matt Stringer. He's the CEO of RNIB. That is coming up on the podcast, plus lots more. Stick around.
The Daily Connect podcast.
This is RNIB Connect Radio, and time now to find out how RNIB is dealing with the coronavirus crisis, and to find out about many of the services that already exist for blind and partially sighted people, how they are continuing. With me on the line is CEO of RNIB, Matt Stringer. Good to have you back on the programme here, Matt.
Thank you for having me, Stephen. Nice to be here.
And I guess the message from RNIB is, what, business as usual?
Yeah, very much so. I think like most organisations have had to cope very quickly with the reality of people being dispersed to work from home, and we've done a lot of work over the last year to, you know, increase our resilience and our technological capability to allow us to do that. So I'm really proud of the way the team have been able to, you know, maintain services as we all now find ourselves working from home.
Services like the RNIB helpline, it is still continuing, and we've been talking about that quite a lot. It's continuing because essentially staff are working from home, Matt. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So some of our critical services that where we take a lot of sort of volume of calls and touch beneficiaries in in a high volume way, we've managed to, you know, maintain the level of service. And actually we're seeing this week, you know, a higher number of calls that you'd as you would expect at the moment, which we are coping with. So if I just go through a list of a few of the things we've done. So yes, our helpline is fully functioning. And as at the start of this week, we were seeing about a 19% increase in calls, which we're coping with, and we're looking to repurpose and redeploy some of our teams into sort of give further capacity in the helpline. Our ECLOs, our ICLO liaison officers as well, who normally sit in hospitals. Some are still in hospitals, but clearly hospitals are the front line of this crisis, and they're focusing on other things. So we're finding our ECLOs again working from home, but able to provide the usual sort of great advice through the phone, and equally some of the ECLOs are also helping out on the helpline as well.
I notice on the RNIB website on the front page there are a number of questions that have been put up with some really interesting answers. I was reading through some of them earlier today, and I've been reading through them because a lot of questions like, you know, how do I be guided now as a blind person because I'm now not able to get within a certain distance with people. Where are these questions coming from, Matt? Is this being driven from the people getting in touch with the RNIB helpline?
Yeah, I mean, we're finding a number of media by which people can, you know, ask us questions or feedback points. So through the helpline, yes, through social media, clearly, which we're monitoring and picking up sort of particular questions or themes. So there's a number of different sort of channels, if you like, that we've got where we're gathering intelligence. I think I'm glad you mentioned the website there, Stephen. Well done. You know, it's a fabulous resource and a critical resource for us at the moment, which I would steer people towards to get all the up-to-date information that we are providing through the website. And we're equally putting out, contact details, phone numbers through social media as well, just to make sure people know who to contact. I mean, one other thing I should just come on and talk about is, I think, you know, what you've seen in our sector has been an incredible sort of coming together and working together of some of the main players. So ourselves working with Guide Dogs and working with TPT, Thomas Pocklington Trust, and Visionary UK to bring some sort of critical mass of the sector together. And when you asked about some of those questions, well, we've created a single points of support for the blind and partially sighted community with those four organisations coming together, which gives, you know, a real thorough breakdown of information across themes that you might want to know about, as you mentioned, things like medication, things like shopping, things like, you know, what happens with medical appointments, things like, you know, how can you go out and be guided. And we're updating that constantly with a sort of FAQs as well, reflecting the questions that are coming in. So that's been something that's been pulled together in double quick time this week.
You mentioned shopping, and of course supermarkets have updated a lot of their advice on the opening times that they are going to open for elderly and vulnerable people who need to do their shopping. And you want more clarity on this, and you want more to be done by the supermarkets to make sure that blind and partially sighted people, for example, get good access to online delivery slots and things like that. And you've been working with those other charities to really push that forward, haven't you?
Yeah, we did down at the back of last week. So again, I sort of drove a bit of coordination with the other charities, and we wrote a letter to all the grocery CEOs on Friday last week, actually, and had a lot of positive responses back over the weekend, because clearly they're working sort of 24/7 to feed the nation at the moment. Yeah. And I think they're doing a great job, actually, and sort of wrestling with all these conundrums about how do you maintain the environment to shop, how do you allow people who are, you know, isolating at home in vulnerable groups to have, fair access to shopping, whether that's in the store or home delivery. That's still work in progress a bit at the moment, although we're seeing clearly that the grocers are improving the way they provide for vulnerable groups this week in terms of extra hours to come shopping, the social distancing measures in stores, etc. I think they're still wrestling with the sort of online technology to try and improve how vulnerable people can identify appropriately when they sort of sign in and get some of those prioritized delivery slots. So I think we've seen a lot of action, a lot of improvement on the back of our prompting and others, I'm sure. Probably still a bit of work to go to make sure that the online side of things becomes a bit more organized for vulnerable groups in society.
We touched on this when we spoke to you last, Matt, but you know, the charity sector itself is also a little bit under pressure here, because you know, employers are being told that, you know, they will get support for their staff, but not much word for charities at the moment. The government are due to announce something that will support charities. Have you got any concerns about this? Are you raising those concerns?
Yeah, we have. We've sort of lobbied through the NCVO and Akivo. I wrote a note to the Cabinet Office this week. We've had a couple of ministerial contacts this week as well. So, you know, we're putting our shoulder to the wheel, the rest of the sector, and we're hoping that the Chancellor will announce something at some point. And certainly the Prime Minister's questions yesterday, you know, made acknowledgement to the needs of the charity sector. Again, I think the government, Chancellor, be moving in double quick time to, you know, manage a number of different groups, employers full stop. You know, clearly they're still self-employed, need to have some support, so you know, we're taking our place, I think, in the queue, but I would hope that we would get some acknowledgement by the end of the week, and if not then Monday, for what the sector needs. I mean, clearly, you know, we are doing a lot of sort of financial modelling internally to make sure, you know, we can get through this. But like all organisations, you know, when people can't go out, and there's no face-to-face activity, you know, your day-in, day-out fundraising opportunities reduce. And clearly, we benefit at the moment from a healthy sort of legacy pipeline. And again, the value of the estates that come through the legacy pipeline are affected by, you know, a sort of halt in the property market, really, and decline in stock market value as well.
Well, listen, I mean, all of that is very serious stuff, but we have to sort of try and lighten the mood as well, Matt, as much as we can. And I do have to ask you, you know, I know you're a very busy man, and I can only imagine how busy you must be being the CEO of a major national charity. But if you ever have any downtime, are you trying anything new? Or are you maybe a lot of people are learning languages and trying all kinds of new things? Have you done any of that?
It's a good question, Stephen. I haven't had time to learn a new language just yet, but my routine seems to get to 6 o'clock and then try and force myself out with some fresh air by taking the dog for a walk, actually in a prescribed fashion,
yes,
maintaining social distancing with other people. I read a lot normally, and actually not doing a commute at the moment and being at home, I have forced myself to try and sort of find 30 minutes in the evening to make sure I still read, actually. So that's probably my guilty pleasure at the moment.
Brilliant. Matt Stringer, CEO of RNIB, good to have you with us, and we will speak to you again soon for a further update.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Nice to speak to you.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
So Matt Stringer there talking on the Daily Connect on Friday about the updates from RNIB. Good to know that everything is continuing as much as possible. The iClinic Liaison Officer Service, of course, vital as it is, continuing by phone. The RNIB helpline continuing, of course. The helpline, just a reminder, is open between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. on weekdays and 9 a.m. till 1 p.m. on Saturdays, not open on Sundays. But all the staff there working from home, so very much available to you. Now, more from RNIB coming up, but first let's turn to Blind Veterans, the charity. Barry Snell's been talking to them this week.
Sight loss charity Blind Veterans UK have announced a new service to allow them to continue to support blind veterans throughout the coronavirus outbreak. Here to tell us more is Fran McSweeney, who is the Assistant Director of Operations at Blind Veterans UK. Now, Fran, more than 90% of your beneficiaries are over 70 years old. This current situation is a huge priority for you guys at Blind Veterans. What have you introduced?
Yeah, well, hi, Barry. Thanks for getting in touch with us. So just to let you know, we support about 5,000 members throughout the UK, right across the four countries. And as you say, we're really quite concerned because as well as being blind, they are quite elderly. 90% are over 70, but actually a lot of our members are much older than that. So many are in their 90s and over 100. So as well as having the same struggles that everybody does about being in this lockdown situation, not being able to get out to the shops, they are having to obviously navigate with sight loss, but also other conditions like, you know, mobility issues, hearing issues, all sorts of things. So what we've done, we've completely set aside our day-to-day work. So our usual model is we provide services in our centres and in the community. We have various groups going. But what we've done is we have redirected the whole charity to provide a national support service to these 5,000 veterans. So we're currently in the process of ringing them all. We are just making contact and checking in, seeing how they are, finding out whether they have any particular urgent needs. So we've already uncovered several who have no food. They're struggling to get medication delivered. They've got dogs that need walking, really quite basic needs around that. So we're immediately putting in place some practical support about that. For others, it's much more about not wanting to be isolated. So Blind Veterans is like a big family. People meet each other very regularly. They're in touch all the time. So we're really keen that we keep them connected with each other. And over the coming weeks, we're going to be working with them really to try and find ways to make that happen. So we've already arranged, for example, for members to ring groups of other members. But over the next few weeks, we're going to be looking at what we can do remotely to keep people connected. Initial priority at the moment is really identifying the people who are most vulnerable and making sure they're safe, that their physical and emotional needs are met, and that they feel well cared for, and that we are there for them, basically.
In these uncertain times, Fran, how important is a voice, even if it's just on the other end of a phone, for people's mental health and their general well-being?
it's a frightening time for everybody in this country. I don't believe there's a single person who hasn't been affected in some way by this. And if, I mean, many of our members are quite elderly, they have other disabilities, they have sight loss, as we know. Many of them have actually lived through quite serious conflict. You know, they've been in World War II, or they've been in Falklands War or Afghanistan. They've already experienced some quite traumatic things in their lives. And for some of them, this is just another thing that they, no one was expecting it, and it brings up all sorts of things. So it's very difficult. We already know that isolation is one of the biggest issues that our members face. So part of what we do is about connection. It's about enjoyment of life. And to suddenly find that kind of structure taken away is really, really difficult. So we are focusing all of our energies really on making sure that people don't feel alone, that they are connected. They've got someone to talk to. We've enlisted our volunteers. So we have 1,000 volunteers out there and all of our staff. So we've got people in fundraising, in our finance teams, people who don't normally have contact with members. They are ringing members and just, you know, having a chat, having a cup of tea together over the phone. So it's really important, I think, that people have someone to talk to, even if it's just for a laugh. You know, it doesn't have to be serious and all heavy. We've got to find a way of enjoying ourselves over the next few months. So that's what we're going to be working on.
Do you feel as if the country's pulling together in the one direction now?
You know, we really do. It's just incredible. I mean, just within Blind Veterans UK, the staff have been incredible. In the space of 2 weeks, we've completely changed our whole charity. And we haven't had a single person that said, oh, I'm not sure I should be doing that. It's not really my job. People are also engaging with their local communities. We've seen so many local community mutual aid groups being set up. And obviously, we've seen how many hundreds of thousands of people have signed up to help the NHS with their work. So I think it really is bringing out the best in people. It's been quite amazing, actually.
Now, a lot of your veterans live down in Brighton, and I assume they would get visits normally from family and friends, and that's had to stop, like it has for everyone across the country. How are they finding the transition?
Do you know, they've been amazing. So we have 32 permanent residents in our centre in Brighton, and we run it as a residential care and nursing home. And the members have been absolutely supportive of everything that we've done. We have had to stop visits to them from family and friends, and keeping in touch with them through Skype and through phone calls. So we have our care staff down there who are enabling the members that are living within the centre to keep in daily contact if they want to with their families through Skype. We have someone on site who's providing entertainment to them. So really, they've got the run of the place. It's quite interesting for them, because usually they're used to an ever-changing group of visitors. So they've been brilliant. They're very stoical. They're really pulling together, keeping each other's spirits up and keeping the staff spirits up as well. So it's been great to see. And they're all fine so far, and they are our absolute priority. We're determined to keep them safe. We've put in place very, very stringent infection control measures. We've limited who can go into the building to essential staff only. Even the centre manager doesn't go into the building now because she's not involved with care. We're doing absolutely everything we can to keep them safe. We are aware, obviously, as you are, that if someone has very little or no sight, they will need help with things like unpacking the shopping and sorting it and perhaps labelling it up with a pen friend or marking it in some way. We're very clear that we won't put anyone at risk through delivering this service. So either the people that we're supporting or the volunteers and staff that are doing the shopping service. The reality is people need food, and that's an absolute basic requirement. And if that means that we have to do that, then we will. But obviously in the safest possible way that we can.
Fran, just finally, if anyone would like to find out more information about this new support or about blind veterans in general, how can they do so?
So they can go to our website. That's the easiest way to do it, and it's blindveterans.org.uk. Everything is on there about how to become a member. Anyone can become a member if they've served in the armed forces and they have serious sight loss, really at the level where you could be registered as severely sight impaired, and we'd be happy to support you. So please do get in touch.
Fran McSweeney, Assistant Director of Operations for Blind Veterans UK, thanks for talking to us today on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much, Barry.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
This is RNIB Connect Radio, and we are checking in with lots of organisations around the UK to find out what services are on offer, and also giving those services a chance to, you know, appeal for volunteers. Lots of people out there are willing to give help, but not necessarily sure where they can offer their support, and maybe we can help you get in touch with some good opportunities. With me now is Head of National Programmes for the Macular Society, Sarah Oakley, on the line with me. Hello to you, Sarah.
Hi, Stephen. Hi.
So tell us about what the Macular Society are looking for people to do and what kind of appeal you want to put out there.
Okay, well, our befriending service is a long-established service that we've been running for sort of 10 years now. And we match individuals who'd like to receive a friendly call from somebody who understands what it's like to live with AMD. And we'll match them up with people who have shared backgrounds or interests. So you get to talk about a little bit more than just your eyesight. But obviously, you're talking to somebody who really understands the challenges that you face on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I think that we can very easily forget that people are still going through sight loss at this point. You know, this is something which will continue irrespective of what the national news is. And of course, this news about coronavirus has overwhelmed us all, but it doesn't stop the reality for many people who are losing their vision due to age-related macular degeneration or indeed other eye conditions. Now, obviously, Sarah, people can't physically meet, but, you know, what can they do in order to connect? What are you offering? What are you advising?
Yeah, so our befriending service is a telephone-based service, and we, if somebody would like to volunteer, we give them a short introduction program, and that's all delivered by audio. So there's no kind of workbooks or assessments or anything like that. It's a question of listening through the information, and then we'll come together. It might be on a one-to-one call. It might be a conference call with several other volunteers that have had a chance to listen to the information. So can just go through it, make sure everyone's happy with what's being expected of them, what's being asked of them, answer any questions that might come up. And if everyone's happy to go, then we'll collect that information about them as a person and look to make a good match with them, someone who could really benefit from hearing from them regularly.
How many people do you support around the UK, Sarah?
Our befriending service currently around a 400 mark.
Wow.
As I say, it's been established a long while. We have worked with many, many volunteers over the years. So if it's something that you've tried before and didn't have time to do, then we'll be really grateful to hear from you again. But if it's something that, you know, if you've got a spare half hour or so once a week and you're able to make a call to someone, our volunteers tell us they get just as much out of it as the people that they're calling.
Oh, I bet they do, yeah. And I think, you know, there's no doubt that people are looking for things to do with their time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're someone who is going through AMD or has gone through the process, like you say, you know, that conversation with someone else is invaluable. Mm-hmm. It really is, isn't it? I mean, you know, I know myself, not going through AMD, but, you know, going through sight loss, talking to other people who have gone through either similar or are going through similar, there's no value you can put on that, frankly.
It is so
important.
It really is. And I think one of the things that comes across loud and clear is it's not all about talking about the clinical condition or how much functional vision you've got. It really is those day-to-day conversations. But because you're speaking to somebody who absolutely knows what it's like to live with it, it can maybe have a little some of the things that went wrong for you, or you don't have to explain why you found it so challenging to match the socks or whatever it was, why you were so worried about meeting people. Not that you can meet people at the moment. So this is where the telephone really does help. It's that lifeline for people that would otherwise be getting out and about.
Yeah, exactly. So it's those practical everyday things which do cause a lot of anxiety for a lot of people. And just for someone else to just say, oh yeah, I do that, that alone can be just such a massive thing. Where you go, really? You do that as well?
Yeah.
How do you deal with it? Oh, well, I use a clothes peg to hold them together, or, you know, whatever it is they do. And, you know, that's the thing, to just kind of offer those real day-to-day tips and hints, not, as you say, not just to sit and talk about how much sight you've got, but actually to talk about the practical stuff that, you know, how am I going to read a book, or how am I going to cook a meal, or how am I going to use a microwave? You know, those things that people might ask, you know, there are answers to all those questions, but only people who've gone through it can really give you the kind of answer you're going to want, and actually the kind of credible answer you're going to want as well. No, listen, it's a fantastic service, and I'm more than happy to get you on to talk about it today, because I think people need to know, first of all, it exists, and also that, you know, they can get involved as well. So, you know, the next question, Sarah, how do people get involved? What can people do if they want to volunteer?
Right. Your best bet is to go to the Macular Society website, which is www.macularsociety.org. And follow the lines to the volunteering page. Or you can call our advice and information service, which is still very much open and operational at this time. So for any other questions you may have as well. And that's 0300 3030 111.
Brilliant. Listen, thank you so much. We'll get that tweeted out as well so people can find that information. But thank you so much for coming on, and I hope you're staying safe there in Hampshire, Sarah.
We certainly are. Thanks a lot, Stephen.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Follow us on Twitter for more information. We will, of course, post more on this there. As I say, find us on Twitter at RNIB Radio, or you can follow us on Facebook as well. RNIB Connect Radio there.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Let's get back to Barry Snell now, who's been talking to blind golfer Barry McCluskey about his challenges of dealing with isolation during this time, this really weird time in our lives. Barry's been talking to him about his love of golf, his challenges, though, not being able to get out and play.
Joined now by Scottish blind golfer Barry McCluskey. Barry had success last year at the US Open and also the Vision Cup. How are you doing, Barry?
Yeah, I'm good, apart from being isolated, but we're okay.
Strange time, certainly. How does this affect golf? Has it stopped completely?
I have no practice facilities whatsoever now, or can't get near the golf course or anything. They're all shut down at the minute. We're kind of left in limbo. We really don't know where we stand at the minute.
In some ways, sport takes a back seat because things are so serious, and it's the fear of the unknown as well, isn't it?
Of course it is, Barry. You know, people's health's more important than getting on a golf course to me. You know, I've got a wee boy, I've got my family. The last thing I want to see is any of them getting any health problems whatsoever. It's just a waiting game for everybody at the minute.
The family been staying at home?
Yeah, so me and my sister are isolated at the moment. Both of us are registered blind, and both of us have two totally different eye conditions. Mine's is keratoconus, but I'm also asthmatic as well. So we're in social isolation at the minute.
And do you rely on any of the sight loss services, Barry?
No, I rely on my parents. My parents do a lot of keeping track of my tablets and stuff like that and looking after me. And, you know, I'm very fortunate.
Now, a lot of the blind community are facing isolation, as they obviously are the over 70s at the moment. Are you keeping in touch with any of the other blind golf players?
There's a few of the Scottish guys, you know, that I keep in contact with just through phone calls and just keeping up to date on what's happening with Scottish blind golf and, you know, how we're going to take it forward for the rest of the year and stuff like that. I'm also in contact with, you know, a few blind golfers from Ireland and stuff like that who I keep regular contact with just to keep the British Opens over in Ireland this year. So just kind of keeping up to date on what's happening with that if we're going to go forward with it. Obviously, I've been keeping contact with the Spanish guys, and the Spanish Open has now been cancelled. So it's just a waiting game, Barry, to see what tournaments are going to go ahead and what tournaments aren't going to go ahead.
So how are you keeping the fitness up?
My dad's actually converted our garage into a wee gym. So my dad takes me out there and kind of looks after me on the rower and the bike and does some free weight stuff with me. So I'm keeping myself ticking over, keeping the fitness levels up, just so that hopefully in the not too distant future that I'm ready to go as soon as we get the okay from the government.
Now, at the moment, you're currently number two in the Scottish standings. You're hoping to get to the number one spot, obviously. Since we last spoke, it was just after the Vision Cup, the success you had there. What has the last maybe 9 months or so been like, Barry?
To be honest, it's been a wee bit surreal, you know, because in 2019, I was pretty new into blind golf, and then all of a sudden, I've went and won the US Open, and then I've competed in the Vision Cup. So, you know, my name's kind of got about, and when I go to tournaments, people kind of recognise me, and, you know, I've came back and I've won in three different tournaments in Scotland, which has kept the kind of run going, because six tournaments I won last year, and then got selected for Scotland International duty, and we went down to England with not such a strong team, and the English thought they were going to beat us, and we beat them on the last day, which was a phenomenal experience. You know, to go and represent your country at anything's just, it's absolutely phenomenal.
Especially a match of that magnitude, the old enemy, that must have been satisfying.
It certainly was, Barry. As I said, we had a few pullouts and we never really took a very strong side down, but we were 3-1 down after the first day, and then we were 6-3 down after the second day, and we've come back and beat them in the last day. You know, we've pulled it right out of the hat, and the guys were absolutely phenomenal. The team spirit was unbelievable, and you know, we played as a team as well. We all dovetailed together, and it was a phenomenal experience. You know, there was tears by many.
Barry, you mentioned with your success, you're starting to be noticed with that. Is there added pressure on there?
Of course there is. It's the same as any sport. If you get to near the top, or if you are at the top, people are always out to try and beat you, and it gives me the inspiration to try and, you know, kick on that wee bit more and become even better now. I know that it's been difficult. You know, it's been a really hard transition for me over the last year, but I'm loving the pressure. You know, the big one for me this year is the World Championships in South Africa in September. I managed to qualify for that. There's only 3 guys from Scotland that managed to qualify for that, but we're still in limbo to see if that's going to go ahead as well. So hopefully we get out to South Africa and we can compete in that tournament as well.
Now, you also work for a living. The golf is only part-time at the moment. What's happening with your other job? Are you working from home?
I actually work in the Glasgow Royal Concert Hall. I'm the operations coordinator in there. So I'm actually off at the minute. The concert hall's shut down.
Well, you'll be getting requests for tickets from all our listeners now that you've told us where you work, Barry.
I get requests all the time from my family.
I'm sure you do. Listen, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us on RNIB Connect Radio.
No bother, Barry. Thanks very much, and it's a pleasure anytime.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
I hope you're enjoying some of the stories. We couldn't fit them all into the podcast, but there are tons of stories every single day on the Daily Connect, and indeed across RNIB Connect Radio. Some brilliant shows as well. If you're into yoga, or even if you're not, you should try it out. We have described yoga every weekday morning on RNIB Connect Radio from 7 o'clock. And also, starting this Monday, if you're listening to this on Monday, it's on now at 8 a.m., you can listen to brand new books. Sherlock Holmes is a brand new book starting at 8 a.m. and will continue every weekday morning at that time. Plus, we'll also continue with Little Women as well from 2 o'clock each weekday on RNIB Connect Radio. That's repeated at 10 o'clock at night as well. Brilliant range of books, brilliant range of stories as well, all from RNIB Talking Books Library and presented by Robert Kirkwood here on RNIB Connect Radio. Now, sometimes books can be enjoyable, but so can music, and music can make the real difference to a lot of people's lives. It can really lift a mood, and especially in these dark times, music can make a real difference. And Polina Kohoreva has been speaking to someone who knows that all too well.
We often say that music has healing abilities, especially in times when we feel vulnerable and alone. Blogger Ellen Williams often writes about how she uses music to help cope with her emotions and believes it's a big part of finding acceptance. And Ellen joins me now. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, how are you?
I'm not too bad. So it's a unique situation we find ourselves in right now, and it seems music could be what helps many of us who are stuck indoors get through this situation.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think music is a healer. It can be a source of comfort for us a lot of the time. And it's always been a big part of my life, so I find that I listen to it more now when we have more time at home, and some artists are doing things like Instagram Lives, and so they're bringing us concerts from home, which I think is a really unique way of going about the situation. And yeah, I think it's really good that it's bringing us together in that sense.
Obviously, you said music was a big part of your life, and I think I know you play a few instruments and you've written a few songs as well.
Yeah, so I started learning to play the piano when I was about 7 or 8 years old, and then I started to learn the harp a couple of years later. And at the time, I was really self-conscious about my vision impairment. I'd just been diagnosed 2 years before starting to play the piano, and I was feeling a bit incapable and a bit insignificant because of it. But then I learned that things like music can be made accessible, so it gave me a sense of purpose in a way. And then I just carried on, and I loved playing instruments, and I found a lot of comfort through that, and I channeled a lot of my feelings into the music, and I started writing a few songs after that. They never saw the light of day, but it was a form of escapism for me in a way. I just really enjoyed it.
So you mentioned music is accessible for anyone who's obviously looking for things to do right now or something to kind of occupy in their mind. What advice could you give for finding little tweaks to make it a bit more accessible to learn a new instrument?
So I learned a lot by ear. So I was very attuned to the melodies, and I learned a lot that way. But when I was younger, I sent manuscripts off to the RNIB, and they'd adapt them to a size that I could see, which was really helpful for me. But as my vision deteriorated, I depended more heavily on my ear. But obviously, I'd learned to do that over the years. But there's things like music braille as well, which I know some people who have used that, and they found it really helpful. So there's definitely a lot of ways that you can go about it and make it accessible, and not being able to see doesn't mean that you can't enjoy music.
How did you find music helped you over the last few years to kind of, I guess, come to terms with your sight loss?
I think it was just a form of escapism for me. I really enjoyed just throwing myself into the music world, in a sense, and just feeling like I belong to something, and feeling a sense of purpose that I was able to do something despite the fact that my vision was deteriorating.
And obviously on your blog, you write a lot about music, and amongst all of this, there's your experience of attending concerts. And a few years ago, you attended your first concert. Was that a big step for you?
It was a big step, because I've always found big crowds quite anxiety inducing for me. So I was a bit hesitant about going, and whether or not I'd feel quite overwhelmed by all the people there. But it was such an amazing experience. And the first person I went to see was Shawn Mendes, and I absolutely loved the concert, and I think I've definitely caught the music or concert bug. So I've been to a few after that, and I just love the atmosphere at the concert now, and I think it's really powerful, and it just brings people together in a way I've never really experienced before, so it's incredible.
And it can help you connect with other people. And you've attended concerts with other people as well, as a fellow blogger that we have spoken to before on our station as well.
Yeah, so I've gone to concerts with my sighted friends, as well as Holly, who is a fellow blogger. And we've been to see Shawn Mendes together a couple of times, and we went to those concerts at Manchester Arena, and they've always been really good with accessibility and giving us assistance. So we were able to go to those concerts independently without having to take our parents or our other friends in with us. So it gave us that opportunity to enjoy the experience together, despite that fact that we weren't able to see.
So obviously right now we can't really go to any live events, but let's just look ahead to the future, to something quite exciting. And there'll be some people there that have not been to a live concert and have sight loss, and they are a bit apprehensive, like you were in the beginning, about going to one. What advice could you give them?
I think it's important to research the venue beforehand, just so you know where the entrance is and where you have to go, so you're not worried about it on the day. But a lot of venues offer free personal assistant tickets, which I've often made use out of. So you're able to take a sighted person with you, which I think is really helpful. And it takes a bit of the pressure away and takes a bit of the anxiety away as well. And I've talked to accessibility lines of venues just to see what kind of support they offer. And that's a really helpful thing to do as well. And it kind of helps to put your mind at ease, which I think is really important.
And for everyone kind of staying at home right now, you did mention there are other alternatives for music right now, even if the events are being cancelled.
Yeah, so artists such as Niall Horan, Shawn Mendes, Chris Martin from Coldplay and all sorts of others have been doing concerts on Instagram Live. So essentially bringing us a concert from home, which is a really unique thing to do, and they're making the most of the experience or the situation we're currently in. So I think it's definitely helping to build a deeper connection between artists and their fans. And it's something that we've never really experienced before. So, yeah, I think it's really special. But obviously we can still appreciate music. We can still play instruments if we do that, or listen to our favourite songs and artists through CDs or through streaming services. So there's definitely a lot of ways that we can appreciate music at the moment.
So there's a few streaming services out there, but which one do you use personally?
So I use Spotify. I have a membership, so I pay monthly for that, but it's great because it gives me access to all the music I need and all my favourite artists. So, and it's really accessible as well, which is always a plus.
What would you say are the best features when you use that streaming service?
So I use a screen reader on my phone called VoiceOver, and quite a lot of the features are accessible. They're read out by the screen reader, which is always helpful, because in the past I've come across things that don't read every feature out, which can be quite frustrating if you can't see and then you don't know what you're clicking and where the link will take you. So Spotify is really good in that sense, and just I think it's really inclusive for everyone.
That's amazing. And we all have time now to appreciate music more than we ever really do on our daily basis. And perhaps this is the time to learn a new instrument. But thank you so much, Ellen. This has been so insightful. But before you go, your blog is called My Blurred World. Where can we follow you?
Yes, so my blog is myblurredworld.com. And all my social media channels like Facebook, Twitter and Instagram are linked on there.
Ellen Williams, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Well, that's almost it for the podcast. Just one final thing to say, and it's my personal highlight of the week. And I hope this becomes a regular thing where we stand up, we salute, we clap, we cheer for the wonderful NHS and the amazing work that is going on through these very difficult times. Just a moment of our time is worth so much to everyone, and it really is the very least we can do. But just to stand up and clap. And these were the scenes in Southwest London on Thursday night at 8 p.m. when the nation stood up and applauded our National Health Service. And there you go. Those are the scenes from Southwest London on Thursday night. Quite incredible. People just looking up from their smartphones, opening the front doors and coming together to cheer on our wonderful nurses and doctors and staff at NHS hospitals across this country. That's it for the Daily Connect for this week, for the podcast at least. The show returns Mondays and indeed every weekday from 10 till 12 and also 4 till 6. It's repeated as well, so check it out there. And don't forget all of our other shows as well. You'll find all the details at rnibconnectradio.org.uk. Thank you for listening, and please do stay safe.